Washington's Vision at Valley Forge by Robert C. Newman. For nearly 150 years, a story has been circulating that George Washington had a vision of the future of America while the troops were camped at Valley Forge in 1777. I first encountered the story when my mother showed me a tract about it published by the Russian Bible Society in the 1950s. Since then, I've been able to trace it back to a pamphlet published in 1864. Here's what the story looks like. Washington is visited in his tent by a mysterious ethereal woman who shows him a vision of three perils that sketch the future of the United States. Peril one is the American Revolution. Peril two is the Civil War. Peril three is an invasion that nearly destroys the country. We give here some selections from each of these perils on the following panels. Peril one, the Revolution. At that moment, I beheld a dark, shadowy being, like an angel, standing, or rather floating, in midair between Europe and America. Dipping water out of the ocean in the hollow of each hand, he sprinkled some upon America with his right hand, while he cast upon Europe some with his left. Immediately a dark cloud arose from each of these countries and joined in mid-ocean. For a while it rained stationary, and then moved slowly westward until it enveloped America in its murky folds. Sharp flashes of lightning now gleamed throughout it at intervals, and I heard the smothered groans and cries of the American people. A second time, the angel dipped water from the ocean and sprinkled it as before. The dark cloud was then drawn back to the ocean, into whose heaving waves it sank from view. Peril 2, the Civil War. Son of the Republic, the end of a century cometh, look and learn. At this, the dark, shadowy angel turned his face southward, and from Africa I saw an ill-omened specter approaching our land. It flitted slowly and heavily over every village, town, and city of the latter, the inhabitants of which presently set themselves in battle array one against the other. As I continued looking, I saw a bright angel on whose brow rested a crown of light, on which was traced the word Union, bearing an American flag, which he placed between the divided nation and said, "Remember, ye are brethren." Instantly, the inhabitants, casting down their weapons, became friends once more and united around the national standard. And again I heard the mysterious voice saying, "Son of the Republic, the second peril has passed. Look and learn." Third peril, the invasion. "Son of the Republic, the end of a century cometh. Look and learn." At this, the dark, shadowy angel placed a trumpet to his mouth and blew three distinct blasts, and taking water from the ocean, sprinkled it out upon Europe, Asia, and Africa. Then my eyes looked upon a fearful scene. From each of these countries arose thick black clouds that were soon joined into one, and throughout this mass gleamed a dark red light by which I saw hordes of armed men who, moving with the cloud, marched by land and sailed by sea to America, which country was presently enveloped in the volume of the cloud, and I dimly saw these vast armies devastate the whole country and pillage and burn the villages, towns, and cities that I had beheld springing up. Continuing, as my ears listened to the thundering of cannon, clashing of swords, and shouts and cries of the millions in mortal combat, I again heard the mysterious voice saying, "Son of the Republic, look and learn." When the voice had ceased, the dark, shadowy angel placed his trumpet once more to his mouth, blew a long, fearful blast. Instantly a light as of a thousand suns shone down from above me and pierced and broke into fragments the dark cloud which enveloped America. The same moment I saw the angel upon which foreheads still shone the word Union, and who bore our national flag in one hand and a sword in the other, descend from heaven, attended by legions of bright spirits. These immediately joined the inhabitants of America, who I perceived were well nigh overcome, but who immediately, taking courage again, closed up their broken ranks and renewed the battle. And then the conclusion of the vision gives this lesson. Son of the Republic, what you have seen is thus interpreted. Three perils will come upon the Republic. The most fearful is the second, passing which the whole world united shall never be able to prevail against her. Let every child of the Republic learn to live for his God, his land, and Union. With these words, the figure vanished. I started from my seat and felt that I had seen the vision wherein had been shown to me the birth, progress, and destiny of the Republic of the United States. In Union, she will have strength. In disunion, her destruction. Well, is the story history? This 1864 version, by the way, can be accessed on the Indiana University website. The address for it is a very long one, and I give it here in print on the PowerPoint talk. You'll have to take a look there. Did Washington ever experience civilization? Well, without time machines, it's impossible to be sure, but there are several features which are very suspicious. For instance, the author, Wesley Bradshaw, is a pseudonym for Charles Wesley Alexander, an author and publisher of many sensational stories. A Google search or a look through library catalogs, particularly big libraries like the Library of Congress, will turn up many of these. His alleged informant in the story, Anthony Sherman, claims that he was the only one alive who knew of this incident in 1859 when the interview takes place. He is 99 when he tells the story of Bradshaw on July 4, 1859. That means he would have only been 17 in 1977, so it's not likely that he is that he was the confidential officer, to whom Washington is supposed to have told the story. That would make it then secondhand, even given the reality of Anthony Sherman. The only Anthony Sherman known to have served in the American forces during the Revolution was not present at Valley Forge and apparently died before 1840. Both these pieces of information based on his application for a pension in 1830. Tentative conclusions. These features suggest that the story is merely another piece of fiction authored by Wesley Bradshaw, also known as Charles Wesley Alexander. It appears that he may have published the story as early as 1861 when it appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer. I have not yet been able to get a copy of this 1861 version, though I am working on that. The 1864 version, title page shown at right, was apparently condensed and reprinted in the newspaper The Grand Army of the Republic, the title of which was National Tribune, in 1880. Most of the recent versions of the story that appear in websites and 20th Century Tracts and that sort of thing claim to come from this 1880 version. But there's a significant change that has been made in all versions of the story that I'm aware of circulating in the 20th century. The text has been modified to make the third peril the worst rather than the second. The 1880 article and the 1864 pamphlet have the second peril as the worst, as can be seen above in panel number 8. This modification certainly makes the story more relevant in the 20th century, with the third peril still to come, but it's also fraudulent, whatever the merit of the whole story. Yet with the passing of the 20th century, it looks like this major real prediction of the vision has been falsified. The vision appears to put the Revolution in the 18th century, the Civil War in the 19th century, and the invasion in the 20th century, this marked by two sentences, the end of a century has come, I believe it is. You'll have to check that back in the quotations. I quote both of those passages. As is now obvious, no such invasion occurred in the 20th century. Can we draw some lessons from this alleged vision of George Washington at Valley Forge? Well, at best we can tell at this point, the story of Washington's vision at Valley Forge is a fictional account written by Wesley Bradshaw shortly after the alleged date of his meeting with Anthony Sherman in 1859. It reminds us of Jesus' warning that the time between Jesus' own ascension and return will be characterized by false prophets, and indeed it has been. It also reminds us that humans are notoriously bad at predicting the future. Bradshaw, writing in 1861 or thereabouts, if we're right, can obviously give a description, he doesn't give much detail anyway, of the Revolution and of the Civil War, and if you look at his Civil War description in great detail, that tells you virtually nothing about how the war goes, not even who wins, or even that the full war is conducted. And, of course, bombs on the invasion, if indeed it's was scheduled for the 20th century. The transmission history of this story is also interesting. Someone changed the main point of the story from the importance of national unity, so the second parable is the worst one, to the prediction of invasion to make it more exciting for later readers. This provides us with yet another lesson. And that's a lesson about uncontrolled transmission of various texts. The difference between the canonical writings of the Bible and the so-called Gospels and Acts of the Gnostics is that the former had a controlled transmission. Because the leaders of the Christian church viewed the Bible as a real revelation from God, they did not dare to tamper with its message. Gnosticism, a diffuse movement with many gurus, cranked out new revelations and modified old ones whenever a new group split off. It's obvious from some of the material that the gurus did not really believe this stuff, but were basically playing on the credibility, the credulity of their followers. So, another important lesson. We need to be sure that the revelations we trust in really come from the God who cannot lie. Well, we have assembled our various materials at our website, www.ibri.org, to help site visitors appreciate the marvelous evidence that God has provided for our faith. That's the end of our brief talk, and I hope you'll find it helpful.